The Middle Ages was a pretty male-dominated time, right? Most of what we hear from that period is about kings and knights and Viking marauders, with women playing only a supporting role. But that impression is not entirely accurate, and new scholarship has brought the rich lives and accomplishments of medieval European women into sharper focus. Yanina Ramirez tells this story in the new book, Femina, A New History of the Middle Ages Through the Women Written Out of It. Yanina is a lecturer at Oxford University, an art historian, and a BBC broadcaster. She joins us now to share five of her big ideas.
Hello, I'm Dr. Yanina Ramirez. I'm an Oxford academic, BBC documentary maker, and writer. I'm here to tell you about my book, the instant Sunday Times bestseller, Femina, A New History of the Middle Ages Through the Women Written Out of It. Why should you read this book? What can discovering lost medieval women possibly do for you today? Well, in this book, I'm trying a different approach to writing history. I am putting the frame on the largest excluded group from historical narratives, women, and by finding them, I hope to open up new stories, new angles, and new ways of finding people from the past. And by finding empowering women with agency, I hope to show how we can reframe our present and work towards a more inclusive future. Big claims for a history book. I want to share five key insights with you now, but of course, you'll have to read the whole book to get the full picture. Insight number one. The suffragettes were not entirely breaking new ground. They were trying to return to a medieval time which they saw as more inclusive. I open my book with the account of Emily Wilding Davidson, a famous suffragette who died while trying to pin a suffragette's banner to the king's horse during the 1913 Derby. She has been remembered as a martyr to the cause. Her funeral was the single most attended non-royal funeral in English history. But what very few people know about Emily was that she was a medievalist. She had studied medieval literature at Oxford University, and while she wasn't allowed to graduate, as was the case with all women at that point, she went on to continue writing about medieval themes. She wrote articles, stories about medieval women. And when you read Emily's works, what you get is a sense that she saw a real potential for women of the medieval period, that they had an ability to have their voices heard, to be empowered on a political sphere, a religious sphere, and within culture and society in a way that she and her fellow 20th century women were being denied. So when she writes about them, it's as if she wants to reclaim some of that power. And when I knew this about the suffragettes, it really made me think differently, that they weren't just crying out for women's rights in a vacuum. They saw that their rights were being denied to them. And by fighting for the vote, they were hoping to bring back some of the agency they saw that medieval women had. Of course, their figurehead was Joan of Arc, that incredible medieval warrior woman. So really, starting the book with the suffragettes was my way of showing that women's histories have been written for them in the very recent present. Insight number two. Women have always been warriors and military leaders. It's no secret that women can do everything men can do when put under enough pressure. There are stories of mothers lifting cars to save their infants. And certainly when times are hard, women can really do all the things that are physically demanding as much as men can as well. But it's been difficult to find evidence for this from the past. What I have found is looking through texts, there are individuals like Æthelflæd, the Lady of the Mercians, who was a consummate leader in Anglo-Saxon England in the 9th century. She led troops against Viking raiders, even throwing beehives over the walls of Chester to defend her people. And then there are stories of the Cathar ladies, these revolutionaries who were under attack during Crusades in the 13th century, where Christians were turning against other Christians. Women would be able to defend their castle under siege, launch counterattacks, and really protect their people with every possible means. But there's one story in particular I want to share with you, which has redrawn our understanding of women as warriors. in the beginning of the 20th century, an archaeologist called Stolpe was excavating a Viking site in Birka in Sweden. He found the remains of a thriving trading town, and it has a very short life. It was only active really for a couple of hundred years, which is like gold dust for the archaeologist. Stolpe excavated hundreds of graves at this site, but one in particular caught his attention. It was up on a headland next to the army barracks with a huge boulder raised up on top of it. Underneath this boulder, he discovered an individual enthroned with a complete armory of weapons arranged around them. At their feet were two horses, a mare and a stallion that had been sacrificed and buried with the individual. And on their lap was a gaming board, Hnefatafl, the Viking tactical game where you have to defend and attack. Stolpe announced this to be the finest warrior grave ever discovered, the finest example of Viking warriors. But over the last 100 years, osteoarchaeologists have returned to the bones and raised questions about them. It wasn't until 2019 when a team from Stockholm were able to extract the DNA from the bones and teeth buried in this grave that it was discovered there were no XY chromosomes. Every chromosome was XX, meaning that the individual buried in this warrior grave was a woman. Now, we can't say much more than that. We can't say how this woman represented herself, how she wore her hair, how she spoke, how she walked, how she dressed, how she was perceived by others around her. But just the knowledge that this woman could be buried in such a high status with so many weapons is telling. It's also telling that she has this board game on her lap, because it suggests she was a military strategist, able to really play out how battles would best be conducted, and possibly contributing to the important defensive role of this town of Birka. Insight number 3. Women's rights changed with the Reformation. We might think that the medieval period was nasty, brutish, and short, a dark age in which all the lights went out and people were living with ignorance and superstition. But the more I've studied this period, the more I realise that simply isn't the case. This is a version of the medieval period that has been developed and reinforced across the last 500 centuries, specifically after the Reformation. The Reformation was about the break with Rome, a new age, an enlightenment, a modern time. And so casting everything that came before as dark, ignorant, and superstitious was in the benefit of more recent writers. Actually, it's Martin Luther who coins the phrase, a woman's place is in the home. And it's with the Reformation that we see some of the agency women had enjoyed in the medieval period being denied to them. And this is because during that vast stretch of time I cover in my book from the 7th century right up to the 15th, women did have options. Yes, the majority of women would have followed the traditional route of being married, probably arranged by their family, and then having children and bringing these up within the home. They would help their partners in trade, they would take part in all sorts of different industry, and they lived in the secular world to across the different class divides. They were their poor and extremely rich examples of secular women in the medieval age. But there was another route open to them. Their families, or they themselves, could choose to have them put into a religious order. Now, today, when we think of a convent or a nun, we have a rather fixed view, I think, in our heads of somebody extremely pious, cutting themselves off from the world and living a very pure and limited life within the walls of a convent. But that is not the case of the medieval world. To go into a medieval convent or a medieval double monastery where monks and nuns lived alongside each other was actually an empowering thing, because it was in these environments that everything intellectual was taking place. These were the universities, the hospitals, the art centres, the music centres, the creative hubs of the medieval world. And in these spaces, women could thrive. They could have access to books, to education. They were safe from threats of the outside world. They wouldn't have to die in childbirth. And in these environments, they challenged their male contemporaries with their achievements. Hildegard of Bingen becoming one of the most singular polymaths the world has known in the 12th century. Insight number four. New discoveries are showing us the women hidden in plain sight. It was DNA analysis that brought us news that the Birka warrior was a woman, and now archaeology is telling the story of the many rather than the few. Every day I open my inbox to new discoveries. Archaeologists are working from space, not even having to pick up a trowel to uncover cultures and societies from the past. It is a singularly exciting time to be engaging with history. And objects are coming to light. So I was able to tell the story of King Jadwiga, one of the only female kings in European history, through the handbag that she had owned. It shows us this intelligent, unique, fascinating, funny woman who lived in 14th century Poland. And then texts are constantly coming to light. If it hadn't been for Ignatius Butler Bowden finding the Book of Marjorie Kemp when he was looking for some ping pong balls in his stately home, then we would have lost this incredibly unique medieval female voice. In the Book of Marjorie Kemp, we learn about a three-dimensional woman, a woman who travelled to the Holy Land, up to Sweden, down to Spain, across Poland. She's probably better travelled than many people today. And her voice is so loud and brave and brazen at times. You know, she will talk happily about sex, about what it's like to be a woman working in the beer industry, trying to set up a mill. She was an entrepreneur of her time. And if that book hadn't have been found, we would never have known she had existed. So these discoveries are allowing us to tell new stories and bring flesh to what otherwise would just be a fragment of evidence that these people ever existed. These are real people, as complex and diverse as we are today, who were constantly trying to push against societal norms and have their voices heard. It's important to keep an eye on these discoveries, as every change is bringing about new ways of engaging with the past. Insight number five. The medieval world was incredibly diverse, with long-distance travel and multiracial communities. We tend to think that people in the medieval world were born, lived, married, and died all within sight of their parish church, that there really wasn't a particularly cosmopolitan world. Sure, this may be the case for many people that were living at that time, but that is not the true full picture. Numerous people were travelling. If we look at the Viking period, you have individuals who have gone to Constantinople, who have then travelled over to Newfoundland, setting foot on the edges of the Americas hundreds of years before Columbus. You also have evidence of long-distance trade. The Silk Roads was such a vibrant network. And you find jade appearing in Swedish burials. You find silks being woven in Anglo-Saxon England. And this is not a world that is disconnected, but one that is curious, that is reaching out. With the Crusades, for example, you have worlds meeting, the Islamic world butting up against the Christian world, and the exchange of scientific, technological, mathematical, and ideological information across those lines. But one discovery in particular really brought to light how diverse the medieval world was, and it actually surprised me. It was only made in 2022, and it was an analysis of skeletons found in a Black Pit burial in Spitalfields in London. It means we can date it exactly to 1349, and there were hundreds of skeletons placed in this burial pit. It was an emergency burial pit, which seems so prescient, having lived through the dark times of the pandemic. The skeletons in that burial pit were analysed through cutting-edge new forensic technology. These skeletons were able to be assessed as to where they were born, where they grew up, what health defects they suffered from, what they died from, but also what their background was, what their genetic background was. And in this particular study, I learned something amazing. In that burial pit in London in the 14th century, the population split was roughly 70% white European and 30% non-white African and Asian backgrounds. Now, the current census of London shows that the population is split roughly 60% white European and 40% non-white. That means that if you'd walked down the streets of 14th century London, it would not have looked that different to walking down the street today. Even I wouldn't have imagined it was that rich and that diverse. So these are just five insights that I'm giving you today. If you read the whole book, it is stuffed with discoveries, and I really hope you enjoy reading it. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Yanina. That was Yanina Ramirez with Five Big Ideas from Femina, A New History of the Middle Ages Through the Women Written Out of It. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.